There's a sound older than words, the steady pulse of a drum. Some say it calls warriors. Others claim that it can wake the dead. Tonight, drummer Jean Boomer Grenier doesn't just bring the beat, he brings decades of real encounters with the unexplained. In his book, Drumming Up the Dead, Boomer opens the door to something most of us only glimpse in nightmares. Haunted childhoods, violent poltergeists, shadowy visitors, and messages from the other side. These are not stories from strangers. These are his stories. And they're not finished with him yet. What if the rhythm you follow leads you straight to the afterlife? So turn down the lights. This is the Paranormal 360. I'm your host on this journey into the strange and supernatural. And joining me now on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline is Jean Boomer Grenier. Do you prefer Jean? Do you want to be Boomer? What's the proper terminology here for you?
It's actually Jean, but I get Boomer all the time because everybody says Gene, and that got old really quick from grade school. So that's how I get my nickname, Boomer. But Jean's fine. Boomer's fine.
Either one works for you. Well, Jean, thank you for being here and part of the show this evening. I'm excited to get a chance to talk with you. And I know, again, your book is out and available, Drumming Up the Dead, My Paranormal Experiences. What made you decide to sit down and open up to this part of your life?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on. Appreciate that. What happened was about 30 years ago, I was having, talking with some friends and ghost stories and that type of things and stuff that happened to me. And one of them said, you should write a book. And I'm like, I'm not going to write a book. I'm a musician. I play drums and play guitar, and I barely read books, to be honest with you. So, unless they're music related. But then what happened when my mom passed away, I was on the road touring, and I had an episode that happened that I couldn't discount, honestly. And I kept thinking about it on the flight home, saying, you know, maybe now's the time to write this book and figure out exactly what I want to say and what stories I need to put in there. Because from that 30 years to now, a lot of things have happened. So I figured maybe now it's time to actually do it.
Did the paranormal activity and things in your life begin long before your work in music?
Oh, yeah. I try to make this in a nutshell. So stuff happened when I was young, probably, you know, 4, 5, 6 years old, except I didn't realize then that I was actually having apparently a connection with paranormal type of thing until I was like 13 years old, 12 or 13. And I saw, I had my first encounter that, again, unmistakable. And, seeing an uncle that had passed away. And, that's when I kind of realized that, you know, maybe there, other than just Casper, that there actually is really ghosts, because I really didn't, growing up, I really honestly didn't really see it that way. But as time went on, and as my life went on, and as I learned more about what was paranormal and experiences and things like that, then I went back and the puzzle pieces started getting put together that maybe I was actually having this experiences way before, when I didn't even realize that that's what it was.
With this experience with your uncle, were you aware that he had passed when you saw him, or was this something out of the blue for you?
No, I was aware. He passed a year before I saw him, and I have this in the book, but it's actually a pretty cool story. And so my family got together, my father's brothers and sisters would get together, because one of my aunts was a Catholic nun, and she used to come down from Canada around the holidays and a couple times a year to visit. And so I was there, and all my aunts and uncles, and they were all sitting around a kitchen table, and my uncle walked out of his room, plain as day. Like, it wasn't that I could see through him. It wasn't like a mist. It wasn't a dark shadow. It was like he was standing right there, and he walked right behind a couple of my aunts, including the nun, went into a bathroom. And when I saw that, my head started getting tight. Like, I felt like I was in a vice, because I couldn't believe it. I was kind of shell-shocked. And I'm looking around at my family, including my father, and they're all just still chatting. I'm like, is anybody seeing this? Am I not? What's going on here? And so, yeah.
It
was crazy.
You see him. He passes behind the family. When you see him, does he turn and seem to notice you and the family? Or is it just like you're just watching a scene in his daily life play out?
Exactly that. He didn't look at anybody. He just kind of walked like it was a morning thing. And there was nobody in the house. He just got up, walked in, and then he walked right back out, went back in his room.
But being that solid, seeing him move through, could you hear the sound of his feet shuffling across the floor, the sound of the fabric of his clothes moving? Could you hear the bathroom door shut? Anything along those lines?
Well, the bathroom door didn't shut. He just kind of went in, but he went out of sight. I honestly don't remember if I could hear that, because I know I was kind of freaking out, to be honest with you. And my aunts and uncles and my father, being French, they talked very loud, so there was a lot of that going on. So I don't really remember. I'm not sure I really remember actually hearing him, but I don't think so. I think it was just kind of like it would be kind of like a silent movie that I can remember anyway.
How did your family react when you told them what you just witnessed?
Well, what happened was one of my aunts actually said, you know, "Hey, Jean, you don't look good. Are you feeling good?" And I'm like, no. I didn't really want to say anything out loud to them because I really didn't know. And she's like, "Well, why don't you lay down?" And she brought me into my uncle's bedroom, and I actually laid on the bed with my feet on the floor facing out to the kitchen. And he had a workshop, which would be to the left of me if I would have looked to the left. And my aunt kept saying, "Hey, lay on the bed correctly." And I'm like, no, I'm fine right here. Cause if I had to get up and bail, I'm ready to go.
Right.
So I laid there, and it was kind of weird, but that particular uncle, even with my cousins, we all kind of felt he had like a resting bitch face. We always thought he was mad. And he honestly, I probably said like maybe 10 sentences to him in my life that I remember. But I happened to look over, and he was in the doorway of the of his workshop, and he just stayed there, and he just smiled. And all my anxiety and all that head, I guess, strain and feeling like my head was in a vice kind of went away. And he kind of backed up. He was on an airport conveyor belt. He just kind of backed up slowly, and the door slowly closed, and it all went away.
So at that point, he did seem to see you or acknowledge you.
He saw me then, and he smiled. Yeah, and that was kind of cool. And so when we were driving home, when I was my father driving home, I told him what happened. And my dad was a devout Catholic, but he was the thing where if he couldn't see it, touch it, or hear it, it didn't exist.
Right.
And so I told him what I saw, and he first thing he said to me was like, "Are you on drugs?" And I'm like, "No, I'm not on drugs. I'm telling you." Well, so he didn't, off the bat, he didn't believe me, but I told my mother did, but, you know, and I happened to talk to my aunt a couple of days later, the one that's a nun. And I asked her privately, I said, "Am I nuts? I saw Uncle Arthur, and I, it was crazy." And, so she's like, "I've seen him twice since she was there." And she was staying in his room. Well, she was visiting, and she saw him twice. And that's when I realized that there has to be something with this, because a Catholic nun wouldn't lie to you.
Right, right. And that you were both seeing him, both having the same experience. We'll continue with our guest in just a few moments. Remember, get a copy of the book. Don't just read the book, folks. You got to rate and review it as well, because that goes a long way to help our authors. We'll be back with more right after this. Welcome back to the Paranormal 360. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Joining me tonight, we have Jean Boomer Grenier. He is the author of My Paranormal Experiences, Drumming Up the Dead. Do you feel, and I just spoke to another guest earlier in the first hour of this evening's show about music and the power of music. Do you feel that your draw to music, your work in that, has made you even more open to the supernatural or paranormal?
Maybe sometimes I'm just really into playing. Like when I'm playing live, I'm not really thinking about that. Just in kind of in the moment. But I think sometimes, yeah, in the creative side, when you're creating songs and things like that, I think some things can come through or maybe inspire you or inspire me. So, I mean, there's obviously some kind of connection. I mean, I wouldn't say that I play a guitar and I see a ghost, or I play drums and I see a ghost. Right. I don't think it works that way, but there is some kind of maybe vibration connection because it's music.
That's what I was going to say is, you know, we talk so much about this field that there's a vibration to us, to the spirit realm. There are different levels of vibration, and you being a drummer, right? I mean, you're the ultimate in vibration. You're bringing the boom. You're bringing the vibration to the music. And that's why I wondered if, you know, after a concert, you've raised your energy level up in a way and you're surrounding yourself with that rhythmic measure. If there was, you know, I just wonder always what is kind of the catalyst that keeps somebody open to the supernatural and paranormal. Once you had that first experience with your uncle, now that you look back at it through the eyes of an adult, do you notice that there's a lot more that happened that you never really put into the category of paranormal?
Yeah, probably. I mean, you know, it's kind of funny because once I put the book out, I did like an in-store, like, you know, book signing Q&A type of thing. Mm-hmm. And as I was talking to people and they were asking me questions, I realized there was a lot of things that I didn't put in the book because I probably hadn't thought about it at the time. And I think it's the same thing with music, you know, when you're up performing and people and the energy's there and people are giving the energy back and there's a lot of energy going on. Sometimes I don't find the connection when all that is happening. I find it more at the end, right before I'm going to bed, after I'm exhausted mm-hmm. and I'm tired and I'm right at the point where I'm about to fall asleep, but you know, you're awake, but you know, you're kind of sleeping. And then all of a sudden this stuff will come into my head, or sometimes I'll sense that either I'm not alone or somebody's trying to talk to me, or I'll hear kind of like whispering in my, what sounds like whispering in my ears. Sometimes I can make it out. Sometimes it just sounds like, you know, mumble. But that's really where I have, where the connection for me happens. So right. Not necessarily with the music, but maybe when I'm tired or overtired from playing.
You get to travel and play in all types of different arenas, you know, meaning musical venues.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have you ever been there and stumbled upon a spirit or an energy at any of those locations?
Yeah. So here's something that's not in the book, but this is pretty cool. So we were playing up in this place called the Spire up in Maine. And it was an old church that was turned into a music venue. And we were playing and we had a keyboard player, and he was looking up, he was looking at me and then looking up at the balcony behind where the keyboard, the great organs would be. And we saw somebody up in the organ loft. And it was a lady, and she had black hair, and she had like a whitish blue type of, I would say, aura, because I don't think it was like a full person, but it was kind of like an apparition type of thing.
Sure.
And as soon as Scott was playing his keyboard and playing his keyboard solo, that apparition was there and was walking back and forth. And so the audience couldn't see it because we're facing them and it was behind them. But after the show, I looked at Scott and he was looking at me, or after a solo, and I kind of pointed with my drumstick up in the thing, and he shook his head. He saw it. So, and we had talked to the owner of the venue afterwards and asked, you know, is this place haunted by chance? And he said, yeah. He goes, they see a lady, a blue lady, and they, she used to be the, people think that they, she used to be the organist for the church.
Oh, really? Oh, that's interesting. So the music still drives her even into the afterlife.
Right. Especially the keyboards, the piano, because that's what he was playing at the time when she showed up, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's very cool. You have these kind of experiences. Do you ever feel that when you're creating music, you're in that headspace, you know, like John Lennon, as we brought up in the first hour, was said that, you know, we don't really create it. We just become the channel for it. It's there. It exists. And we somehow tap into that. Do you believe that that's true? Or do you believe that the music is within you, but something spiritual helps to unleash it?
I think with that, there is the time where when you're trying to be creative, sometimes, it's sometimes it seems like it's forced because it's not right there and you have mm-hmm. to really work at it. But there's some other times, you know, I've heard other artists talk about it. It goes, they'll wake up, they'll have a dream. They wake up and they write a hit song in 20 minutes and it just comes out of nowhere. and they just absorb it however it is, you know, or something, something's inspiring them, or, you know, it just actually, you know what? It's funny you said that. It just happened. If you, a recent, interview with Sammy Hagar, I don't know if you saw this. Sammy Hagar just put out a new song and a video, for the song, and it's called Encore, something. I listened to it the other day. I heard it once, but he said it was inspired to him by Eddie Van Halen, who came to him in a dream, and actually him and Eddie wrote the song in a dream.
Wow. Really? No, I haven't heard that element of the story.
Check it out. So it's brand new. The song's brand new. And it, the song just got released, I think, either the earlier this week or the end of last week. And there's all interviews with Sammy talking about this, that Eddie came to him in a dream and they wrote the song in a dream, and he put it out. It's actually a pretty cool song. It's a tribute to Ed. So I guess for some people it can't happen, you know?
Very cool. Well, I'll have my producer, Jonathan, play that song coming back from our next commercial break. And we'll try to get that out there so people can give it a listen. I think it's fascinating to hear this. And gosh, Sammy Hagar, he's come forward talking about alien abductions, visitations from his own father's ghost, and now Eddie Van Halen helping him write music in his sleep. That's pretty profound. When you decided to put pen to paper and write this book, I know that you said at first people were trying to tell you to do it and you weren't that inspired. Was this something you just wanted to get out? Did you ever really want to release the book, or how did that come together?
Well, yeah, I mean, I did want to release it. After the situation with my mom, a couple more things happened, and actually another thing with my mom happened that's in the book. And I wanted to release it because for two reasons. Number one, to get all this stuff out of my head. So 30 years in the closet of everything in my head, it was just time to empty that out so I had new space. And but also, so I had a few, well, actually more than a few, but a lot of friends passed away in the past, you know, 3 years aside of my mom and everything. And there was a depression that came along with that. And other friends that were going through it were some of the same things. So I'm like, you know what, maybe if they realize that just because they're not here doesn't mean they're gone. Maybe there's a way if I write this book, it'll actually be helpful and inspiring to somebody else to realize that they don't have to feel negative and sadness about it, that they can still talk to them. They might not get an answer back, but they're still there. They're just not here, but they're there. So
that's beautiful. Let's do this. We have to take a quick break. We'll come back. Let's talk about the experiences you've had with your mom. As I lost my mom 9 years ago, I've had a few experiences along the way, but I'm just curious to hear about what it was like for you, and we'll cover that next. Welcome back. This is the Paranormal 360. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Jean Boomer Grenier is our guest. You talked about experiences with your mom. So you had multiple experiences through the years tied to your mother. Can you, if you're comfortable with it, I know it can be tough sometimes and emotional to talk about these things, but would you be willing to share a story or two with us?
Yeah, sure. So the first thing that happened, and again, it's in the book. I don't want to give everything away, but there's a lot of stuff in the book. So it's not going to give anything away. So, the first thing was right before my mom passed, we had a conversation when she was going through her hospice thing. And she asked me where I was going to be going on the road. And I said, well, you know, Mississippi, Louisiana. I gave her all the states and everything. And she's like, oh, I've never been there. I've never been there. I've never been there. She goes, oh, I'm going to be with you. And I'm like, well, she goes, I want to go. And I'm like, well, how can you go? And she's like, I'll be with you. And what happened was the first instance that made me decide to write the book was I was playing a show. And everyone in the band has to take a solo. So I had a little drum solo thing. And at the end of that year, or all the shows after when she passed, I would always put my drumsticks in the air, cross them, and look up and say, that one's for you, Mom. You know, love you, miss you. Well, this one particular night, I did that. And right out of the corner of my eye and the left side of my head, I saw all this glitter and the stage lights and this glitter like coming down. It looked like snow coming down, and the lights were all reflecting off it. It was just like a burst of like glitter, and it caught me off guard. And I really looked fast, and there was nothing there, but I'm like, okay, I'll think about this later. You know, finished the show, and I went back and looked at the videotape of the show, and it very faintly, it's almost non-existent, but I know where it is because I know where it happened. So you can see a little, couple little things where you can see the glitter a little bit. And that's what made me say, okay, I got to write the book. So I wrote the book and I writing everything and I thought I had everything done. And, as I was sending this stuff to my, the editor, another situation happened with my mom, which is the last chapter in the book. So there's a lighthouse and she loved the beaches and lighthouses. That was her thing. And, we have a huge lighthouse that we had that was on a table when we had her celebration of life, except when we had the celebration of life, she hadn't passed away yet. She said, I want to be at my party. So you're going to do it ahead of time before I leave.
Atta girl.
Yeah. So we had a party, had the band playing everything. And in that lighthouse, there was a spot to put, an electric candle or a battery operated candle, where you have the timer. So it's off on or 12 hours. You can set it for 12 hours. My wife had it outside and we had it set for 6 at night to 6 in the morning. And, so it would be on all night and then would shut off. And so a couple of years went by and with New England weather, my wife decided to bring it in because it was starting to get a little trashed a little bit. So she brought it in. The battery was long dead in the candle. It never came on again, except for a couple of days before the anniversary of her passing. The lighthouse is at the bottom of my stairway and my wife had gotten up in the middle of the night and the light was on in the lighthouse, the candle. And, so she came and woke me up. It was like 3 o'clock in the morning and I don't usually like being woken up there. So but I like my sleep. So she showed me, I got up, took a look at it, went back to sleep. And when I got up in the morning, I'm like, well, she's like, wasn't that cool? Wasn't that cool? And I'm like, it's something. And the candle wasn't on anymore. So now I get home, and it's 2:30 in the afternoon. So now technically the candle should not turn on at 2:30 in the afternoon.
Right.
I was sitting at my computer and the candle is right to the right of me and to the side of me and my mother's ashes are right behind me.
Mm-hmm.
So I said to her, I said, Mom, if that was you, can you turn the candle on? And it came on.
Wow.
And I freaked out. I mean, I really freaked out. So I actually grabbed my phone. And so I have the other two episodes on video. I have them. And maybe it's at some point I'll post them on YouTube and I'll put a link to them. But I turned my phone on. I videotaped it. And I said, Mom, I said, that's really cool. But if you can, I go shut the candle off when you're ready. And it went off like almost immediately. And I was like blown away. So of course I texted my wife and I said, you're not even going to believe what happened. So she got home from work and she's like, let's go through this again. And we sat in my living room, which you could still see the lighthouse across the room. And she's like, tell me exactly what happened again, even though, you just told me and I'm going to videotape it. So I said, okay. So I said it kind of a matter of factly because I'd already told her the story. So you know, it was like old news now. And I said to, you know, something to the effect of, you know, so I get home and I'm watching the candle and I told my mother to turn the candle light on. And right when I said that, the light on the candle came on again. And I'm like, well, kind of like that. And my wife was like, all free, you know, she was like all excited. She's like, oh, that's pretty cool. You can do that. Blah, blah, blah. You know, we told her we loved her and missed her. And as soon as we both said we loved her and missed her, the candle went off.
Wow. That's powerful. Very cool. Yeah. And it has to feel good too, right? Cause you then know that, this is the biggest separation we have in life is death, right? When we're finally separated, but to know that we may not see them all the time. We may not hear them, but that veil is right there and they are never that far away.
I agree 1,000%. And that's the reason why I wrote the book is because when people lose, you know, people, you know, and most times aside of the grief at the beginning, you know, they're like, oh, I miss them. They're gone. And yes, they are. They're gone. But again, just because they're not here doesn't mean they're not here. They're not right here physically, but they're around. And there's many times that I've, you know, and I wrote in the book that I've had signs from other friends, a couple other friends to show me that they were here and they heard me talking. And, you know, you don't get, including my father, who actually was a disbeliever and actually came back to me after he passed and told me that he actually finally believed me. And I felt validated.
Well, That's good.
So
it's sad that it took his death. It's sad that it took his death for him to say, "Hey, by the way, seems you were right."
Yeah, exactly. You know, like, hey, you might have been on something back when you were a kid, and maybe you weren't on drugs, but yeah, I think whatever happens, you know, because nobody knows, and let's be realistic, nobody knows what happens, and I believe that there's people out there that take advantage of that, you know, and I don't think that's right, you know, morally or whatever, right? But nobody knows what's going to happen, and until we get there, and you know, I'm not in a rush or anything to get there, but. Something's on the other side that they can come back to us. So that's really cool. You know? So I just tell people, when you miss them, talk to them, and maybe you'll get a sign back. Maybe you'll get a sign. Maybe you won't get anything right away. Maybe it'll just be a sign one day when you're least expecting it. But you know, what do you got to lose? Everything right. To gain.
It's interesting that you started off with the Sparkle story. I have been in two locations. One was at the Queen Mary in Long Beach, California. I was there leading an event with the TV show Ghost Hunters. And we had a bunch of listeners and TV viewers that were there. And Grant and I, the first night, we went down into the hold in the front of the ship where they kept a lot of the POWs. And while we were down there talking, all of a sudden, in the air above us, just, I called it fairy farts. It just sparkled like Tinkerbell slung her wand. And the two of us were like, what was that? And we were looking with our flashlights to see if there's maybe a live wire dangling. There was nothing. And then I was at the Oddfellows Asylum, the Belvoir Winery in Liberty, Missouri. And we were leading an investigation. And I went into one of the little outbuildings they had. And as we were talking, I said, all right, everybody, let's come together for a second. I want to share a few thoughts with you. Boom, the sparkle shot up again out of nowhere. So I'm glad that other people have seen this, because I mentioned that to people, and when they talk about the fairy sparkles, they think you're nuts. But that is a very real situation. We have to take another quick break. We'll be right back with more right after this. All right, we are back. Jean Grenier, our guest, and he is a drummer, musician, and an author of a brand new book that is available, Drumming Up the Dead. It is his paranormal experiences. Now, poltergeist activity, we touched briefly on that on the introduction. What type of activity, or when did this take place for you?
Nothing really has happened in a long time, but I mean, mm-hmm. probably about 30 years ago. So there's been a couple different instances even before that where, you know, just stuff has moved and things have moved. There's three chapters in the book that it'll be way too long to explain, but in a nutshell, there was a spirit here that was looking for his, I guess, significant other. I don't know if it was a wife or a girlfriend or whatever, and was trying to, in a nutshell, get put an apology out for a situation that happened. Okay. And that episode went on for 10 years. In my house, it went on for 10 years. And even though it's only three pages, I mean, I probably could have wrote a whole book about that. But that guy was pretty pissed off that I couldn't help him. And he actually threw me down the stairs one time. He pulled me out of bed one time. I actually had finger mark bruises on my arms.
Wow.
I wish I would have got pictures of it back then, but there wasn't cell phones too much, but we made peace and everything's good. I think he's still here, but nothing like that. That was probably the most extreme stuff that happened to me, you know, other than, you know, something moving or somebody taking something of mine. And I said, give it back to me. And then all of a sudden it was back in a spot that I'd looked three times and
right.
My wallet's back. And, you know, so, but there was nothing like that guy and, you know, a couple things moving here and there, but, I never had stuff where, you know, I was sitting in a room. Didn't happen to me, but again, there's another thing in the book with when I was younger, the second time I witnessed a paranormal thing, there was an Indian chief that lived or that was haunting a house that's in my neighborhood. And we were having, you know, a party as kids. And the kid that was telling the story at school was like, yeah, you're full of it. You're full of it. And we went over there and sure enough, one guy got dared to go in the room and stay in the room. And he came running out about an hour and a half later, freaking out. And that room was trashed, like everything that was on his mother's nightstand was on the floor, broken glass were picture frames. We heard tribal war drums, like Indian chants, from behind the door. Like we're all, and that kid ran out the door and ran down the hallway of that house and ran out the door so fast. But so that was supposed to get, but it didn't actually happen to me. It happened to a friend of mine. But
you talked about the spirit that was upset and angered at your home, and that was one of the most aggressive. Have you ever felt, or do you ever walk in fear because of the paranormal, or are you pretty, complacent to it? It's just, you know, it exists, it's there, and accept it for what it is.
Yeah. Early on when that was happening, it was kind of, at times it was unsettling, and there was times it was kind of fearful. But as time went on, and as I kind of delved into it a little more, and I kind of, I realized that 9 out of 10 times, and I can't say that they can't hurt you because they can, but it was an energy that was mad because it couldn't get what it needed or wanted. And unfortunately I couldn't help. But I don't really fear it. I'm more curious now. And I'm because I really would like to know what happens after this. But on a daily basis, I don't fear it. My wife and I are next month. We're going down to the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum in West Virginia.
Sure.
And we're doing the locked in thing overnight. So that should be fun. That might be book number two if it works out, if stuff happens. But so more curiosity than fear, unless something really nasty happens. But
right. We've just got a few minutes left together. You sit down to put this book together. You share it. Obviously, you don't mind what people think of you because this is, this is your story, your experiences. What are you hoping that people get out of your book, though?
Well, as soon as I wrote it, I knew that with the paranormal, genre and people, there was going to be a lot of there was going to be a lot of naysayers. There's going to be always going to be people that are skeptical, and that's fine. And if they don't believe me, that's fine too. I'm all right with that. Most people that haven't had something happen to them are not going to believe that there is something else out there. But that doesn't bother me. I mean, if they think I'm nuts, that's fine. People know who I am. I like to think I'm pretty credible and pretty sane, but, I just want people to understand that if you're interested, or, the big takeaway is, if you're missing somebody, they're not gone. I'm sure at some point, maybe we'll all see the ones that have passed, mm-hmm. Again. But I just want people not to get into a depression state where it actually becomes detrimental to their health because of losing somebody else, because that happens, and it happened to me. And mm-hmm. it that's scary. That's more scary than I think the ghosts or paranormal right. Or anything like that. When you get into a situation where you don't have complete control of your thought patterns because you're so worked up, or anxiety, or whatever, grief, whatever it is, that to me is sad. So
that's a beautiful message to leave people with, to go out on, is the fact that, and I've preached this for many years, make right in your life with the people that you love and care about. Forgive, move on, and tell them all the time how you feel, so that there are no dangling threads left out there. There's no sense of, I need to contact them because I want to know if they're still angry at me or have they forgiven me. You just make these things work so that you don't have that sense. And the most important element, right, having both of us lost parents on this, I very easily could have gone down a very dark spiral when my mom passed. She was my best friend. She was my biggest supporter. She was amazing for all the years of my life. And instead of allowing myself to make her legacy a thing of pain and sorrow and remorse, I chose instead to honor her life and live the best life I could, to have as many experiences I could in her honor. So I hope you'll all take away from that. Get a copy of the book, read it for yourself, and remember to rate and review the book as well. because some beats don't just echo through the air, they echo through time. So very special thanks to Jean Boomer Grenier for stepping into the shadows with us tonight. His story is a reminder the past doesn't sleep, and neither do the things that haunt it. The drums are still pounding, my friends. Somewhere, something is listening. Thank you for tuning in. This is the Paranormal 360.